This is a reading of the book by Rudolf Steiner. It's actually two books, A Way of Self-Knowledge and The Threshold of the Spiritual World. This is the beginning of part two, the book, The Threshold of the Spiritual World. Introductory remarks. This volume contains short aphoristic descriptions of aspects of the world and human nature that become visible when spiritual cognition steps over the boundary that separates the world of the senses from the spiritual world. My presentation of these descriptions is intended to be neither systematic nor complete. Instead, my intention has been to present, in a free manner, a few descriptions of certain spiritual experiences. From this perspective, these descriptions, as well as those in title A Way of Self-Knowledge, should be considered supplementary to my other works. Nevertheless, I have tried to provide descriptions that stand alone and do not require any familiarity with my other works. People dedicated to working toward knowledge of spiritual science will always feel a need to consider spiritual life from fresh points of view. While every presentation is by nature one-sided, the one-sidedness is more marked in descriptions of the spiritual realm than it is in those of the sense-perceptible realm. Therefore, a single presentation will never satisfy someone truly interested in spiritual knowledge. Thus I have attempted, in works like the present one, to describe from a different point of view spiritual facts I have already portrayed elsewhere. Such presentations are complementary, like photographs of the same object taken from different angles. With each different perspective, there is an approach to present some knowledge that cannot be presented from another. The material in this volume offers those who seek spiritual vision points of departure for further meditation. If you seek such points of departure in order to apply them in your own soul life, you will notice that this is so. Written by Rudolf Steiner in Munich, August 1913. End of introductory remarks. Aphorism 1, titled Trust in Thinking, The Nature of the Thinking Soul Meditation. For waking daily consciousness, human thinking is an island in the river of soul life that flows by in impressions, sensations, feelings, and so on. Once we have understood a feeling or impression, that is, once we have created a thought to illuminate it, we are more or less finished with it. Even amid a storm of passions and emotions, a certain calm arises when the bark of the soul reaches the island of thought. The soul trusts naturally in thinking. Were it to lose this trust in thinking, the soul would lose all certainty in life. Once we begin to doubt thinking, healthy soul life stops. Even if thinking cannot always bring us clarity about something, at least we need the comfort of knowing that we could attain that clarity if only we were able to summon sufficient mental strength and sharpness. A person can come to terms with being unable to bring clarity to something through thinking, but the idea that thinking itself could not bring satisfaction, even if one were to push as deeply into it as should be necessary to attain the complete clarity required by a particular situation, that idea is unbearable. This attitude of the soul toward thinking lies at the heart of all human striving for knowledge. Certain states of mind can dampen it. Nevertheless, in its own dark depths, the soul always feels it can think. Thinkers who doubt the validity and power of thinking deceive themselves about the basic tone of their souls. Often it is the very sharpness of their thought that, by a kind of excess, creates their doubts and perplexities. If they really did not trust thinking, they would not torture themselves so much with doubts and riddles, which are themselves only the results of thinking. If you develop this feeling of trust in relation to thinking, you will find that thinking contains not only something that you form inwardly as the power of the human soul, but also a power that is independent of both you and your soul, and that bears within it a cosmic being toward whom you must work if you wish to inhabit a place that belongs simultaneously both to you and to the world that is independent of you. There is something deeply calming in being able to surrender oneself to the life of thought. In it the soul feels it can get away from itself. The soul needs this feeling just as much as it needs the opposite feeling, that of being able to be totally within itself. Between these two lies the oscillation necessary for a healthy soul life. Wakefulness and sleep are only the extreme manifestations of this oscillation. In wakefulness, the soul is in itself. It lives its own life. In sleep, the soul loses itself in universal cosmic experience and is, in a sense, free of itself. We can also see these two extremes of the pendulum-like movement of the soul in other states of inner experience. Living in one's thoughts, for example, is an instance of the soul's getting away from itself, whereas living in feeling, sensation, emotion, and so forth are all instances of the soul's dwelling in itself. From this perspective, thinking gives the soul the consolation that it needs in the face of feeling abandoned by the world. You are certainly justified in wondering, quote, "What am I in the general stream of world events that runs from infinity to infinity? What am I with my feelings, wishes, and deeds, which have meaning only for me?" Unquote. As soon as you have truly felt what it is to live in thought, you will be able to counter this feeling of abandonment with another perspective. Quote, "The thinking involved in this stream of world events raises me up, and my soul with me. And I live in those events when I allow their essence to flow into me through my thinking." Unquote. Thus you can feel yourself taken up into the world and feel legitimate within it. This attitude of the soul results in a kind of strengthening, which the soul experiences as deriving according to wise laws from cosmic powers. It is not a great leap from this perspective to one that says, quote, "It is not merely I who think, for it thinks in me. World becoming expresses itself in me, and my soul provides only the stage upon which the world lives as thought." Unquote. Philosophies can, of course, reject this attitude. There are many grounds on which the idea that, quote, "the world thinks itself in the human soul," unquote, can be made to seem obviously false. We must recognize, however, that this is an idea that can be acquired only through inner experience. Only those who have acquired it in this way can fully understand its validity. They know that so-called refutations cannot shake that validity. Anyone who has thought his or her way through this thought can see quite clearly the real value of most so-called refutations and proofs, which, as long as one remains falsely convinced of their content, often appear quite infallible. Thus, it is difficult to communicate with those who find such counter-proofs convincing. They have no choice but to believe in them, for they have not done the inner work required to understand the inner experience that brought the other person to the recognition they think is false, or perhaps simply foolish. Anyone who wishes to become familiar with the practice of spiritual science will find such meditations on thinking useful. The work of this kind of meditation is to bring the soul to a state that opens a doorway into the spiritual world. That doorway will remain closed, no matter how ingenious the thinking or how fully scientific the approach, unless the soul prepares to advance to meet the approaching spiritual experiences, or indeed even the account of them. A good preparation for understanding spiritual insights is to feel frequently what strength lies in the mood or attitude of soul when one meditates the thought, quote, "In thinking, I experience myself united with the stream of cosmic existence," unquote. The value of meditating this thought lies much less in the abstract understanding of it than in what is to be gained by repeatedly experiencing the strengthening effect it has on the soul if it flows powerfully through one's inner life. It expands in the soul like a deep spiritual breath of life. Far more than cognizing the content of such a thought, it is experiencing it that is important. Let the thought be present only once in your soul with sufficient conviction, and you can understand it. But if it is to bear fruit in the understanding of the beings and facts of the spiritual world, then, when you have understood it, you must repeatedly bring it to life again in your soul. Again and again you must fill your soul with the same thought. Only that thought must fill your soul, excluding all other thoughts, feelings, and memories. Repeatedly concentrating on a thought that one has completely penetrated gathers the forces of the soul, forces that in normal life are scattered. The soul strengthens itself in itself, and the powers that have been gathered together become organs of perception for the spiritual world and its truths. This brief description indicates the right way to proceed in meditation. First, you work your way through to grasping a thought that you can fully understand with the means provided by everyday life and ordinary thinking. Then you sink yourself repeatedly into that thought, become absorbed in it, and make yourself wholly one with it. By living with a thought known in this way, your soul gains strength. Above, a thought about the nature of thinking itself was chosen as an example, because it is particularly fruitful for meditation. But what was said about meditation applies to every thought that we thoroughly penetrate. It is especially fruitful for a meditator, to know the mood of soul that results from the pendulum-like movement of soul life as described above. It is the surest way to come to the feeling in your meditation that the spiritual world has touched you directly. This feeling is a healthy consequence of meditation. It should radiate its strength into everything you do during the rest of your waking day. But it should not be a continuous, ever-present prolongation of the meditative state. Rather, you should feel, quote, strength flows into my life from my meditation experience, unquote. If you carry your meditative state into daily life like an ever-present imprint, something will spread from it that disturbs the natural simplicity of daily life. Then, during meditation itself, your meditative state will no longer be either strong or pure enough. The true fruits of meditation are brought to maturity only when we raise our meditation and meditative state above the rest of life. Meditation will have the best effect upon our lives when we experience it to be something special, something uplifting. The end of aphorism number 1, and the introductory remarks as well.